How's it going, and welcome to episode 37 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by Kevin Hastings, who should be followed on the Twitter at HastingKevin. We're recording this week's episode on Monday, October 25th, due to the fact that Kevin has some other plans for Tuesday. Kevin, care to share with everyone what is more important than recording your favorite podcast?
Yeah, thank you, Adam. And yes, thank you to you, both of you guys, for being flexible. I'm going to go attend World Series Game 1 on Tuesday evening.
Yeah, in Texas. How far are you from Houston? How far of a drive that's going to be?
It is about a six-hour drive. Well, my coworker is a big Atlanta fan, and we have good friends, of course, in the area, a few of them, but at least two who are Astros fans. So the four of us are going to make the trip down tomorrow morning and get there a few hours before the game and head back in time to go to work on Wednesday evening.
Nice. Now, did you go to any of the Royals World Series games?
No, I went to postseason games, Okay. Not actually the World Series. I have been to World Series games in Arlington. So all of my World Series games have been in Texas.
I haven't been to a World Series game since 2004, and it was totally worth it. And I feel like I'll never top it as a Red Sox fan. So I don't want to go to another World Series game. That's not true. I'll go if somebody wants to pay for my flight and my ticket and all that good stuff. But yeah, so that was a good time. World Series, obviously completely different environment. Playoff games, of course, as well. But World Series, totally different environment. So I got to ask, Kevin, who do you got? Who are you pulling for? Are you just an Atlanta fan by default since your buddy is a fan? Or are you going Dusty Baker?
I have been saying all along, ever since they got over their multiple bouts with COVID, I think it was around May, that everybody or a lot of people have spent so much time disliking, even hating the Astros, that we've forgotten how really good of a baseball team they are. And I think they're going to win the series fairly handily, like six games at most. That's my prediction.
Well, that'd be good for them if it is. Six game, we'll be obviously back in Houston. So like they did with the ALCS, they got to win in front of their home crowd. I don't have a rooting interest at all. I think probably if I, force my hand, I'll probably be rooting for Atlanta just because as a Red Sox fan, you want to say, I don't want the team that beat my team to win. But that's besides. So speaking of Red Sox fans, we have with us another one. So we're going to outflank you, Kevin, on this one. A special guest with us today, Eric Cross of Fantrax is here to help us determine some youngsters who we should be paying attention to as we prepare for the 2022 drafts and we ignore the World Series altogether. Eric Keenan should be followed on the Twitter at EricCross04, and he is extremely active there, constantly posting updates in his various prospect lists, maybe positional dynasty rankings, organizational prospect rankings, overall ranks, what have you. And you can, of course, follow Eric's work in writing over at Fantrax itself. And links to all of that can be found in this episode's description. So make sure you check that out if you haven't been already. Eric, thanks so much for joining us. And as a fellow Red Sox fan, can I safely assume that you're also rooting for Atlanta, or are you more of a Dusty Baker guy?
Yeah, what's up, gentlemen? I don't have a huge rooting interest here. I was really hoping, obviously, as my co-host on the Fantrax Toolshed podcast, Chris Clegg, is an Atlanta fan. We were, I texted them after, so they were up 2-0 at the time, and Red Sox had just gone up 2-1, scored like 12 runs. And I was like, dude, we might get a Atlanta-Boston World Series. How epic would that? We were talking about like getting tickets, meeting up at one of the two spots. I'm not sure where, me going down there, him coming up here, but obviously our Red Sox decided to crap their pants the next few games. But I guess I'm leaning, even though I like Dusty Baker, I'm leaning a little towards Atlanta because when I was growing up and getting into baseball mid to late 90s, Atlanta was on TV a lot, on TBS. So I landed with a lot of likable players, Andrew Jones, Chipper Jones. I loved watching Maddox and Glavin pitch. And who was that catcher? I used to love others. Oh, Javier Lopez. He was good for several years. So yeah, there's a lot of likable players. So they're kind of like my quote unquote NL team. If I have an NL team, I'll go with Atlanta. I think it's going to be a 7-game series. I'll say Atlanta in 7. Austin Riley hits a few bombs, gets the MVP.
Oh, nice. Nice. I would like to see, I've become a big Austin Riley fan. I would like to see that happen for sure. I'm rooting for Atlanta. I would say, I think I'm in Kevin's boat though. I think Houston will pull it off, but I'll always be rooting for a 7-game series, especially Me when too. My team's not involved.
Yep.
Houston in 7. I'll put it, you know, in the recording. So it's there for posterity. We'll see how it works out. All right, Kevin, you've got a, you know, 6-hour drive. But it's not the longest drive you've made in the last month. I made a nice little 12-hour drive.
All baseball related as well.
Right, exactly. I will only drive more than 2 hours if it's baseball related. That's Kevin's mantra, apparently. But I think it was a 12-hour drive that you made over to Arizona for First Pitch Arizona, put on by Baseball HQ.
Yep. Great time. Well worth it.
So let's talk about and Eric, you were in Arizona as well for the Fall League games for First Pitch Arizona. So I want to talk to you guys quickly about a couple of the players that you guys saw so that I can live vicariously through you and not just number scout of what those stats came out. But I'd just like to hear you guys quickly talk about some guys that really stood out to you that you're going to be taking, whether they impact this coming season, fantasy season or not. Just guys that really enjoyed watching, whether they showed some good stuff or they just were fun to watch on the field, what have you. So, Kevin, since you made the longer drive, I know that Eric made the longer flight, but you weren't in the car for 12 hours. I actually don't think I doubt your flight was 12 hours long. So, Kevin, I'm going to start with you. Let's just do hitter pitcher for each of you guys. Kevin, give me hitters to start off with that really stood out to you in the games that you saw?
Well, one of the things that several people mentioned at the First Pitch conference, Jason Collette, for sure, I remember him saying, and other people talked about it as well, and I remember this from 2019, it's not always what you see. Sometimes it's what you hear. And I may have gotten whiplash from one of the moonshots that Michael Tolia hit. And I believe Eric just had him in one of his Fantrax articles this morning and referenced a couple of those moonshots. One of them, it was just the sound. It was like, oh, what just happened? Who is that? And obviously he was one of the players that was known to keep an eye on for most of the people attending. So it's like, oh yeah, mark this down. So most definitely that caught my eye. And then I was fortunate enough for a pitcher, I went a day early. So I was there for opening day of the Fall League. And Asa Lacy of the Royals, who struggled with command all year, and his overall statistics right now for the Fall League show that as well. But he looked really sharp in the 2 innings he threw on opening day. And then again, he had a nice 2-inning outing over this past weekend. The 2/3 of an inning that he has thrown in between those two inning performances, he had trouble with the bases on balls again, but I was impressed with what I saw when I got to see him. And so that's my hitter and pitcher that I was really impressed with, both of those guys.
Nice. All right. Well, keep an eye on both of those guys. Eric, who stood out to you when you were watching? How many games did you end up getting to see, Eric?
6 in the Fall League and then 1 Fall Instructs game as well between Texas and Kansas City, which was really fun. I got to see their first 2 picks from this year, Frank Mazzucato and Ben Caderna, who both really impressed me too. So that was fun. Getting over to the backfield, just talking with some players too. Like Jack Leiter was over there just throwing on the field. Al Leiter was there. It's just, I love that atmosphere. It's just, you'll run into like random, like Al Leiter's there. This is always a fun atmosphere. But for the Fall League, I wish I didn't book my plane tickets so early and waited till the schedule was released, because I would have gone out for opening day. I got there on opening day, but I didn't get into Arizona until the evening after all the games had been started. So I wish I would have seen Lacy and Gore when opening day and Machinsky and all them. But for me, the pitcher, I didn't see a lot of great pitchers out there, unfortunately, even though it was at 6 games. But probably either Bobby Miller or Landon Knack from the Los Angeles Dodgers. They piggybacked each other in one of the starts on, I think it was Friday when I was out there. Miller went the first 2. Knack came in for the 3rd through the 5th. And they both looked really good. Miller made 1 mistake pitch, giving up. He grooved the fastball to Jeter Downs. And he took it out to right center field for a home run. But outside of that, really looked good. Fastball was popping the mitt. I didn't have any radar, but he's a mid-90s guy. Didn't have any radar guns near me, but slider was absolutely filthy. Struck out Downs and Curtis Meade on sliders that were just absolutely, you know, just falling off the table and dropping outside the zone. I really was impressed with him and Knack, too. Knack was mixing his changeup, his slider. He got a couple strikeouts in his three innings. So both those guys really impressed me. And then on the hitting side of things, there were so many. Brett Beatty was probably the most impressive. If I had to give the MVP of my live looks, I'd probably go to Brett Beatty. But I'll go Joey Weimer here. Like, the legend of Joey Weimer was born out there. We were all chanting for him that Saturday night game. There was a bunch of first pitch Arizona attendees there, and we were just chanting for him. And I just interviewed him, and he heard all of us chanting. That was kind of cool. But yeah, like, he had the big breakout season, almost went 30-30 in just 109 games. But then everything, even if you look at his stat line right now, it's not great, but there's been so much loud contact. He showed off his speed, a strong arm from right through at a guy at third base from right field. It was clocked to 89 miles an hour on the throw. All the tools are there, and he just has that, I don't know, like the it factor, right? He just looks like a guy, and just talking with him, like, he just has that feel like, all right, this guy is going to be something. And it's kind of hard to, you know, put that into words sometimes, but he just has that it factor. Like, he just has that drive. I'm all on board the Joey Weimer hype train, and I feel like I'm one of the several that are driving it at this point. So yeah, Weimer was very impressive.
Multiple steering wheels on that.
Yes,
train.
It's like that driver's ed car when they have the steering wheel over there, or at least the brake, so they can be like, no, don't do that. Hit the brake. Yeah.
There you go. All right, Eric, you got to see six games, which is amazing. Did you get to see every team? Because how many teams? There's six teams out there total.
Yes, we saw two teams three times, two teams twice, and two teams once or something like that. Yeah, we saw every team at least once.
And you got to see a couple of, you know, good name players, guys that are on your ranking list, both Dynasty and or your prospect list. How much impact does not only seeing them in AFL, but the AFL production in general impact your rankings as you put them out? I'm assuming that you'll have a new ranking out before spring training at the very least, if not sooner than that, obviously. Typically, you see the rankings come out in January. I'm not sure what your schedule is personally, but how much impact does what players do in the AFL have on what kind of rankings you're going to put out prior to the season?
Yeah, I caution people to take the AFL stats with a kind of a grain of salt, because the pitching quality out there isn't the greatest. And that's usually annually, but especially this year. And then everybody's just tired. A lot of these guys have already gone through full seasons, especially the pitching is, like I said, they get, you know, really get worked out there. I don't move people too much due to what I see, but it's more so looking to back up some things I noticed in season. Like with Joey Weimer, I'm like, all right, the stats were there. You know, is this guy legit? Saw him. All right, I got a better feeling that he's going to be legit. Same thing with Curtis Mead from Tampa Bay. Yeah, I saw him. He had a home run, opposite field double, some nice defensive plays at third base. He's got backing up some things that I saw, you know, in season. Like, all right, let me see these things in person. And really what I saw midseason adds up. Yes, not any big, like Weimer has going to have a big jump, but everybody else, not a lot of big jumps. It's minor, up and down, 10, 20 spots or so. Like Marco Luciano, I moved down a little bit because even though you look at his stats, he's actually tearing it up. I think I saw his only few bad games out there. But
I saw your tweet about that. He went down and I've got him in a couple of dynasty places. And yeah. Oh, man. And then I just saw him skyrocket. Yeah,
runs on Monday after I left. It's come on, Marco. Jeter Downs, another one. It's funny, like we saw Downs, as like he had the home run, but then he looked absolutely lost against anything off speed. Like he can hunt and ambush fastballs, but breaking balls, change ups, he just looks lost. So looking at some of those things that kind of affect my rankings and what I saw throughout the season.
Yeah, that makes sense. The level of competition alone is, you say this about guys going into spring training, don't look too much into the stats that you see coming out of spring training.
Right.
Obviously, there's some things that carry over, but for the most part, starters are going one or two innings. It's usually bullpen games and what have you. Everybody doesn't have all their full stuff. You take it with a grain of salt. So
yeah.
It sounds like AFL to you is very similar in that regard.
Yeah.
Not apples to apples, but it's in the same ballpark.
Yeah. And for example, I was at two different games. Two of the six AFL games I was at had 22 walks in them. That's not exaggeration. Two games had 22 walks.
Yeah, didn't they cancel? Didn't they stop a game?
Yeah, that last game Saturday night, the Joey Weimer breakout game. Yeah, they stopped it after 7.5 innings because Mesa ran out of pitchers. Like I've been to hundreds and hundreds of games in my lifetime, minors, majors, whatever, college. I've never seen anybody run out of pitchers. So this is the first for me.
I believe it was the top of the fifth inning. There were 8 runs scored and 0 outs recorded.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
And then in the other 22 walk game, they got 9, and I think it was the top of the third. So 9 runs in, bases loaded, no outs. They brought in a new pitcher. I forget who it was at this point. Not a huge name. And then he ended up striking out the next 3. It was like the weirdest thing. Yeah, a lot of weirdness went on, but obviously a lot of fun.
Man, it feels like that's an environment where you're just like, hey, can you guys give us a pitcher? It's just one of those, you're in the, like, in the schoolyard again. You're just like, right. These games don't really matter. Can I just have a pitcher? Can you?
I can still hit like 70 if they wanted to pull me out of the stands. I could at least put it over the plate. Yeah.
You should have done that with, it should have been like a raffle for first pitch. They need to figure out how to do that.
You get to pitch in one fall league game when it's a blowout.
You're the emergency pitcher. You're the emergency pitcher. As long as you're in the stands. They can call.
I'll email Brent and Ray, see if we can get that in next year.
I'm going next year for sure.
Nice.
You make great. That happen. All right. Another thing that can impact how we look at these players and these prospects are obviously the projections that come out across the board. There's a ton of them nowadays, but the one that's almost always first, you know, out there is Steamer. And as we're recording this on Monday, Steamer did come out today. And so, Kevin, I'm going to ask you, like, specifically, when it comes to these prospects that you're looking at going into drafts, whether it be in a deep draft and hold or best ball situation, or your roto leagues and you're just, you know, taking a shot on a guy late in a draft, like how much impact are Steamer projections specifically making if you're drafting tomorrow or in October or November? How much weight are you placing on these kind of projections that come out so early for kids that have not, you know, tasted? And there's plenty of guys they are projecting to have plenty of at-bats next year that haven't even tasted the majors. And we're going to talk about a few of them later on in the pod. But how much weight are you placing on these projections?
A little bit in a particular circumstance. I think Steamer especially, and most projection systems are really conservative with these guys, especially Steamer since it comes out so early, just like you mentioned. But when it isn't so conservative on a player, I take notice. One that comes to mind was Luis Robert a couple of years ago. They were high on him and he hadn't played a major league game yet. I took notice. I still didn't end up rostering him anywhere. He skyrocketed up draft boards, but I took notice and did move him up on my list a little bit because of that. I figure there has to be a reason that vary from how conservative they typically are with the prospects. I haven't gotten to do much more than glance at the 2022 projections as of yet. I was very excited when I saw that they were out today. It was like Christmas morning for a few minutes and started like scrolling through and just glancing, but I haven't had a chance to take a real close look yet, but I can't wait to do so. Maybe I'll make one of my buddies drive tomorrow, so I'll have 6 hours to scroll through.
Eric, I talked to you about AFL of production affecting your rankings. How much? I know that there are a ton of prospect rankings out there as well, and you talk to plenty of the other guys in the industry, and I know that these are your rankings, but like, how much do these projections specifically, not other people's rankings, but how much do the projections like Steamer affect your, like, how much do you allow them to get in, seep into your brain when you are adjusting your rankings prior to the season?
Honestly, none. And that's no disrespect to, you know, Steamer or Derek Cardi's The Bat or Ariel Cohen's ATC projections. They're all great. And I look at them. I look at them just more as, go back to my, I'm just a fan. Yeah, we write, we podcast, etc. But, you know, I'm a fan first and foremost. And I used to love growing up as a teenager, especially getting into fantasy baseball. Like, the projections were always what I would love to see, whether it be something online or like in the magazines you get in, you know, Walmart or your grocery store. And so I always love looking at projections to see what they did think of each player. But yeah, I don't let it factor into my rankings at all, though.
Yeah, that's probably good. These are the observations that you are making. These are obviously computer programs, basically, that are spitting out numbers, and obviously they're run by very smart people who know what they're doing, who are also making observations. But you got to stay true to your own observations and your own analysis. So I can appreciate that. All right, so we're here and we brought Eric on, as we mentioned at the top of the show. We want to start really early, start thinking about these players that have no Major League Baseball history. They, you know, haven't broken past Triple A yet. We're going to skip the guys that may have had a cup of coffee in September last. And these are the guys that we think they have a shot of breaking camp after spring training, a la Andrew Vaughn, Jazz Chisholm, and a couple others. And I'll even put Ryan Weathers, who obviously made an appearance in the playoffs, didn't make any regular season games before he broke camp. He broke on the Padres opening day roster. So in a little bit, we'll be talking about that. But first, I think a lot of that's going to hinge on how the CBA comes out over the offseason. Kevin, what do you think about those negotiations and how they may or may not tackle the idea of time manipulation or service manipulation for prospects, young players? Do you think that's going to be something that is on the top of their minds?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, these guys aren't represented by the players union. They're not in a union. They're not part of the negotiations. And as much as we would like to see this happen, it's probably not going to be much of a priority. There might be some minor changes, but I don't think there'll be a whole lot. And the team representatives for the union are veterans. They're going to be looking out for themselves and others that they've known for years. Like I said, maybe some minor changes, but nothing major like most of us would like to see.
Eric, let me get your take on that. Do you think that there's a chance that the CBA will be... Yes, Kevin, I completely agree. Like, the veterans are the ones representing the players' union. I think Francisco Lindor, Max Scherzer are on the board or on the leadership team, if you will. The flip side is they were prospects at one time as well. Everybody knows what happened with Chris Bryant. Everybody knows the other situations that have come about. Eric, do you think that there's any chance that the CBA could actually be changed to incentivize teams to call up their best players early? So these conversations that we're about to have are less likely to like be a question mark, and we'll see the best players up on opening day or even earlier than that.
I wish I could say yes. Yeah, Kevin, answer spot on. I agree with everything Kevin just said. I think it's not going to really change until we have like a changing of the guard in terms of the higher ups in MLB, because it's kind of, it's been this way for a while. Why change it kind of way? And you see they're at least now starting to realize that, you know, we need to improve some of the conditions and whatnot for minor leaguers. That's great. Long way to go, but there's at least been like that first step done. So we'll see where that goes. But yeah, I think that there's going to be a lot of other pressing issues that they're going to need to iron out. So maybe have it on the docket that they want to do something, but I think it probably be one of those things that like gets pushed to the back burner. I wish I could say yes. Like, I would love, I know it's a business. As I've gotten older, I've come to realize it's a business, but I hate seeing a guy like Bobby Witt who just tore it up and went almost 30-30 in AAA or AA and AAA, not get called up, even though he was ready. Now, I was a big Chris Bryant guy too, so I was all irritated when he wasn't getting called up and so on and so forth. So yeah, it's definitely one thing I hope gets better, but I don't see that happening within the next few years, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hope you guys are both wrong. I'm just kidding.
I hope we're wrong too.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
I think we all hope right. We're wrong on this.
Let's assume you guys, unfortunately, let's assume you're right, and let's still speculate, because it still happens. Players still force the issue. We saw it, like I said, we saw it with Andrew Vaughn. We saw it with Jazz Chisholm. We saw it with Jonathan India. I think another great example. Last year, guys that we didn't necessarily expect to see on the opening day roster, but they still found their way in, whether it because of opportunity, because of their production in spring training and their history in the minors. So let's get into it. We're going to do this by, we're going to break it down by division. And Eric, I'm going to really lean on you here, obviously, as the prospect guru on the pod. And by all means, talk about whoever you want and whoever you think even has a chance. But I am going to ask you to nail down the most likely from each division, and then I'll let you throw in a wild card as well for each American League and National League as well. So let's start in the AL East. And as you see on our rundown, I threw out a bunch of names, just obviously who all these people are. You're watching film and you're talking about these guys all the time. So if I miss anybody, by all means, call me out on air. That's fine. But is there anybody on this list in the American League East that really stands out as having a good shot based on talent, based on opportunity on their team, in their major league roster, that you think is worth, you know, keeping an eye on, especially in these early drafts that people are doing? We talk about drafting and draft and holds and best balls. You don't want an empty slot. So it's, if you're going to draft a prospect, you want to make sure that they're going to be putting in the at-bats. They're going to be on the mound as much as possible. And so who do you like in the AL East to have a chance at opening up the 2022 on the major league roster?
Yeah, this was actually the hardest division for me to pinpoint one. Like, the obvious one is, and that's the one I wrote down here. He did have 43 games at AAA this past year and dominated 312, 405, 490. Didn't really have a lot of home runs there, but did have 23 overall in 123 games. I just don't know if Baltimore wants to start that clock early, but he's probably the most likely one. Another one, maybe Oswald Peraza, depending on of the Yankees, depending on how they approach free agency and whenever that does get started with the impending kind of stoppage on December 2nd. That'll be interesting to see how that works out. And it's the Yankees, so you never know what the Yankees are going to do. But I think those are the two there. Maybe, you know, this is an outside shot, but he's going to produce every level, even though he only has four games above a high A ball. So it might be a little off the wall pick. But Curtis Meade of Tampa Bay, he's just produced everywhere. Like a Joey Wendell type of player, can play multiple infield positions. Again, he's probably back down in probably AAA to start, or maybe even AA. But it wouldn't surprise me if they bring him up and use him in the super utility role, if there's like some injuries in spring training, because he's that type of player that Tampa Bay really likes. He has multiple positions. He can play second, he can play third. He's athletic enough to play. I think he can play a little bit of short if needed, a little bit of outfield. So I think he's the type of guy Tampa Bay loves. So that's like a dark horse pick, so to speak, for the AL East.
Yeah, and obviously we're leaving off these players like Josh Lowe and you know, Brujan, who already had major league experience, right, last year, even if it was just a couple of games for in Lowe's situation. I like the Adley pick personally, but the way I see Adley coming up with Baltimore is I think that you're going to bring up Adley alongside a lot of their top pitching prospects, like the Grayson Rodriguez, DL Hall.
Yeah.
And they're just, I think they're going to bring him up as a team, basically. This is a guy that's going to be running their pitching staff for a few years. And I feel like that relationship that he has been able to build and will continue to build throughout the course of the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, that's going to be really important. Kevin, how much concern do you have? And Eric, I can see why this would be the most difficult. And I'm looking at a couple of the guys on my list that you didn't even mention, between Tristan Casas or Jeter Downs, who obviously, as you mentioned, has been struggling not only in the minors, but in, you know, the AFL as well. The fact that I don't see a lot of wiggle room on the major league rosters to make room for them. And yeah. So if Adley has the clearest view, he went in our pitcherless mock draft that we just completed last week, Kevin, like how much interest do you have in somebody like that, who obviously has the talent, obviously has what most people would see as a clear path to playing time? How much concern do you have in Adley or anybody in that situation?
Well, drafting right now, I'm really not interested in these types of guys, with the exception of Adley from this division, because if he does make the team, he's a difference maker, and he's not going extremely high. There are other catchers being drafted ahead of him. Now, you're not getting him in the last round of drafts right now either. However, it's late enough where you can find another catcher, especially in a Yahoo league where it's single catcher league, or the mock that you referred to that we did was a single catcher league. I would take a chance on someone like him, but for the most part in general, we got to wait till we have a better idea before we're using the spot up on these guys.
Yeah, I have a hard time with the guy, Eric, you mentioned like Peraza with the Yankees and as an infielder, not knowing where he possibly could be playing, especially on opening right. day, the way that the Yankees, the history that they have with free agents and what have you, filling in those holes. They don't even have a hole in the infield, but they're going to plug one anyway with all the shortstops that are available out there. So I'm typically in that boat as well. I do take a little bit more risks in drafts this time of year, especially in shallower leagues, but that's a typical strategy in general for shallow leagues. You want to make as many risk picks as you want, because you can always find replacements early on in the season. All right, Eric, we're going to go to the AL Central. We'll stay in the AL, go to the Central. There's some obvious names in this one, I think, but let me hear your take.
Yeah, the Central was one of the easier divisions for me, actually. I was like, when I wrote down like a bunch of names at first, just not even looking at position, and they're all like AL Central, AL West. I'm like, oh, shoot. But yeah, Central, I think there's several players. Like, I listed four. I narrowed it to four. I think Witt is the most likely. Like, there was talks of him coming up early last year. How much of that was just to appease the fan base? I think that definitely factored in a little bit, at least to give the...
Well, it didn't appease any fan base because he didn't actually get called up.
Or maybe not appease, but give some hope. All right, Witt is going to come sooner rather than later, and then they keep him down all year. But I think Witt is the obvious one there. As I said, he spent a lot of time at AAA. He's just dominated everywhere he's gone. He's ready offensively and defensively. I think he's ready for the major leagues. And then I think Riley Green is another one that should be up pretty early. And then Jose Miranda, Nick Prado, a couple more guys. Another Prado had another breakout year, kind of a bounce back year from a down 2019. That a lot of the Royals prospects had kind of a down 2019. Him, MJ Melendez, Cely Matisse, they all had really bad 2019s, and he bounced back in the big way, as did Melendez. So I think you'll see Prado and Witt both up very soon. Green and Miranda not too far. Miranda could make the opening day roster. He's another one that can play multiple positions, second, third. So I think he could, depending on how they look, and there's always a lot of injury risk on that team, he could slide into the opening day roster as well.
I wanted to get your take on a guy that's on this list, Eric, that you mentioned, Yolbert Sanchez of the White Sox. And the only reason I'm bringing it up is it really seems like a situation similar to Jonathan India with the Reds last year, where there was obviously a clear hole, not really a clear hole, but you know, he made a hole at second base. Do you think that's a situation where with a, what seemingly looks like, especially with Nick Madrigal out and they only had Cesar Hernandez for the rest of last year filling in at second base, could he force the issue with the White Sox there, or is he still a little further away?
I think he could. This year he did have 39 games at the AA level, but at the same time, he's shown a solid hit tool. He's always hit for a high average, 306 career average in 128 minor league games. So the experience might not quite be there, but he's one that, you know, with a hot spring, and if they don't fill that second base spot externally this offseason via trade or free agency, I think there's at least a chance that you could see Yolbert Sanchez, because he's just really impressed at every level, and he can play some shortstop as well. So I think that definitely helps. So yeah, I think there's a chance you see him.
Kevin, I have two obvious questions. Are the Kansas City Royals going to treat Bobby Witt the same way they did Edward Olivares?
Oh, absolutely not. That's not going to, that much we know.
People would riot.
Going beyond that, it gets a little more complicated. But to answer that question, just flat out, no, they can't do that.
Now, Kevin, now Eric mentioned a bunch of Royals in his list. Besides Bobby Witt, then, who are you the most excited for, and who do you think makes the opening of all of them? Is there a chance that multiple players make the opening day roster for the Royals from that list?
I don't think so, because I think Hunter Dozier definitely gets at least one more shot here. Ryan O'Hearn might be out, but it's crowded without Ryan O'Hearn. And I would really like to see Melendez, especially if we're going to start letting Salvador Perez be the designated hitter more often. I'd rather see Melendez up than them continue with Cam Gallagher. Nothing against Cam Gallagher, but Melendez tore it up this season. But I doubt it's more than one. And at this point, as much as we hate it as fans, even as much as we hate it, I have to admit, it makes sense to wait a couple of weeks on all of them.
Yeah. Expect you talk to me in 5 years. And then as a fan, don't want to see your Chris Bryant's leaving in a year early or what have you. So I get that. It's easy to say we want them to get up now. And then as an individual team fan, it's hard to see them go, especially if you are a fan of those smaller market teams that are going to struggle. Whether that's, you know, justified, their struggle is justified or not, that's a whole different podcast. I'm sure it is what it is. All right, Eric, we'll finish out the AL with the AL West. Like you mentioned, that was probably the second strongest one. I guess there's only three, so that's not really saying much. But who do you like in the AL West coming out on opening day?
There's two names that really, and I apologize, I know you asked me for one, but there are two names that really sneak out. I guess the one I think is most likely is probably Josh Jung of the Texas Rangers. You know, he probably would have already been up if he didn't have an injury. I think he missed like a month and a half, 2 months right in the middle of the season, or earlier on the season, excuse me. So I think he would have already been up. Very advanced hitter. He was one of the top collegiate bats coming out of that 2019 draft class out of Texas Tech. Hit for average, hit for power. Solid defender at third, not really a lot in front of him down there in Texas. They're definitely in a rebuild and trying to find what parts fit for their long-term plan. So I think he'll be up. And then just the other one I think has a chance, and that might have already been up as well, Pedro Leon of the Houston Astros, especially if Carlos Correa leaves, which I think is almost a certainty at this point. Just from hearing him talk, I think he's gone. So they've been working on Leon. He's played some shortstop this year as well. He's been being groomed as like the next shortstop for them after Correa leaves. So I think strong spring, you could see Leon break camp there too.
Yeah, I can see. I like the Leon pick. if nothing else, he has, you know, the outfield, the center field situation as well as a backup plan. And Houston could use some backup in center field for sure. And obviously, yeah, Jake Myers has been good slash fine, but it would be nice to have a talent like Leon on the roster that can fill in such an important spot in the outfield. Kevin, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. Like, we haven't talked a whole lot, if I'm not mistaken, at all about any pitchers coming up or breaking camp. And I know it's rare. It's not as common. Like I mentioned with Weathers earlier on, he basically was like the only one this year. But like, how much stock are you putting into any pitchers that you are catching wind or you might hear that they're going to break camp, as opposed to a lot of these hitters that Eric's throwing out there?
None of them. I made the mistake. It ended up being a mistake. It may not always be a mistake, but a couple of years ago, draft and hold leagues, I thought, what if I can get by on some lesser pitching and take all of these guys that are going to come up between the end of April and June? And none of them did.
Yep.
So I learned my lesson. Some are going to do it, but I'm not going to try speculating who it will be.
I made that same mistake, Kevin, this year in the tout draft and hold, where I think, all right, I got enough major league depth. I'll get some of these prospects, and like a couple came up, but not as nearly as many as I thought. So I went from being, I was like top four for the first half of the season, was in first for a couple weeks. And then I fell down to, I think, ninth out of 15. So just because I didn't have the depth and I had some injuries. Yeah,
once the injuries start happening, you don't have any, you're taking zeros.
Right.
I was.
Yeah. And Keston Hiura forgot how to hit, and Alec Bohm forgot how to hit, and then got sent down. So yeah, I was like, I don't have the depth right now. So yeah, I learned that lesson too.
Yeah, it's hard to take those zeros, especially in a draft and hold. You're like, oh, I have 50 roster spots. I've got all
the- that right. was the plan. It yeah. seemed like a great idea.
You never think you're going to have a zero, but it happens.
Yeah. All right. Then, Eric, I'm gonna put your feet to the fire then. On the rundown, I have the next section is AL wildcard. So it's like any player from the AL, but I'm gonna force you to pick a pitcher that you think could break camp with their major league team. Now, that's not to say that they won't get sent back down at some point, as a lot of major league teams will do. They'll bring them up for the first month or so, because time manipulation is not linear. It's like it's not only at the beginning of the year. As long as you basically miss 3 weeks of the season, doesn't matter when, you can still get that extra year of control. So with that being said, give me at least one pitcher that you think could surprise us as a prospect that has no major league experience right now, but could still break camp, whether it's in a rotation spot or this is not the AL. So, or like a Max Meyer who could come up in a bullpen role just to get major league experience for Miami. So obviously you can't pick him. We're talking American League.
That was actually a guy I was talking about a little bit in the National League. The American League, there's really no, glaring spots here that I'm seeing. There's no guys that really stick out. I guess maybe I might look to Minnesota. Maybe you could see, even though he had a kind of up and down year, maybe a Simeon Woods Richardson, maybe a Jordan Belazovich, one of those two, maybe in a bullpen role. But in terms of starters, a lot of the close guys are in the National League right now. And outside of Seattle, but I don't think we see maybe George Kirby. I wouldn't put, you know, George
Kirby. I think that's the one Adam was hoping you would say.
Yeah. George Kirby, if you want the bigger name, I think George Kirby probably has the best chance. Is that, I don't think Hancock is ready. All the Cleveland guys aren't quite ready yet. You know, like Espino and all of them. Yeah, I'd probably, if you want a big name, I'll go Kirby, then maybe one of the Minnesota guys I mentioned.
Well, I think a lot of people listening are also, Kirby's obviously on the list, I think. He's on my list. But
I love
Grayson Rodriguez is the name everybody's going to be clamoring for, as he has his AAA experience. Obviously, there's nobody blocking him in the Baltimore rotation. And no, I don't even have the rotation in front of me. It doesn't matter. Nobody's blocking.
It's John Means and then a bunch of blah.
Yeah. Dean Kramer is not going to stop him from making the major league roster. So, but Baltimore, the same conversation happens with Adley. No matter what, Kevin, I'll go to you. It's a similar question I just asked you. Even though there's nobody blocking him, he's on everybody's top one, two, maybe three pitching prospects in baseball. He's ready to go. Is he somebody you're worth? Is he worth a stash option in a regular league, a roto league, where you have fab and you can turn over that roster? You're willing to take the zero for the first however many weeks on the chance that he actually breaks camp?
Possibly. However, you got to be willing to let him go early. If it's not going to happen, you can't be worried that he's going to get called up as soon as you drop him. You just got to take that risk. And if it doesn't happen pretty quickly, you can't be making a decision between him and an injured guy you need to keep. Or it's a big talk in Arizona. I was talking about this with Nick Pollock this morning, and Eric knows it's maximizing volume at bats, innings pitched. Of course, we need quality at bats and innings pitched, but I just can't be, we used to say we can stash one. I'm not even sure we can, at least not for very long, any longer. I think we got to take that chance maybe on the one. And of course, Grayson Rodriguez is the type of guy we would love to have if it works out. But we have to be willing to let him go pretty quickly if it's not happening.
Now, see, Grayson Rodriguez is the type of player that I would consider drafting in an NFBC style league with my last pick, mm-hmm. and then not worry about dropping him. I almost want to drop him and then try to roll the dice and get him really cheap in Fab now that he's available. For those listening who don't know, in NFBC leagues, prospects or anybody without any major, not on the major league roster on opening day, is not available to be picked up through Fab.
When we're going to do a move like that, because I agree, that's the way to do it. But we're not going to get news before anybody else does. So you just have to start doing it periodically. Every week when you're going through your Fab, all right, I have my starting lineup. I have my backup. I have my hitter to use over the weekend if anything happens, multi-position eligible player. I have everything covered. I still have a spot. Pick him up for a buck, even though there's no news that it's even possible he might be coming up. A week or two later, you need that spot. You drop him. You do the same thing again the next time you have a spot. You can't just hold him the whole time, probably, unless you're extremely lucky with injuries. Like I said, we're probably not going to hear anything any sooner than anybody else. So just continuously keep grabbing him for that dollar or two just in case it happens.
Yeah, it's how I ended up with Logan Gilbert early on, because exactly what you said. I'm like, I don't know that he's coming up, but this is the time. Like, he's out there, throw a dollar on him, got him, and got lucky. He was up the next week. I got lucky. It could be used loosely with Logan Gilbert the way.
You were hoping. But
yeah, I got him on the roster. Yeah. He wasn't always in my starting rotation until maybe later on, but I digress. It is difficult to let go of these guys. I made a mistake in our mock draft, and I probably drafted too many prospects. And by too many, three. And like, I got Bobby Witt, I got Torkelson, and I got Vidal Brujan. And so it's like, I know that I only have this league only has four bench spots. So it's like, I know I'm going to have to drop one of these guys, at least one, if they don't all make the opening day roster in this fictional mock draft scenario. Luckily, I won't have to make that decision. I just get to talk about these players when I talk with Nick Pollock on our podcast. It is difficult to do that. Like, it's almost less difficult to just not draft them than it is to draft them and then have to force yourself to drop them. Because no matter what we say, no matter how many leagues you're in, you still form some kind of fictional relationship with these players that are on your fantasy team. At least in my mind, is if you're doing it right, you do. If you're doing it strictly professionally, then you're probably just looking at numbers, and that's fine. But that's, you know, neither here nor there at this moment. Let's move on to the National League, Eric. Let's go in opposite order, though. Let's start on the West Coast and start with the NL West. Is there any names out there worth, you know, I also realize that the Colorado Rockies are in the NL West. And so I'm just going to assume that you're only looking at four teams that could possibly call up a prospect of any kind of note to actually play games in Colorado. So who do you got from the other four teams in the NL West?
Yeah, everyone knows me. I've been sucked in by the Rockies prospects, Garrett Hampson being the most recent example. But I'm learning my lesson. They've burned me so often. So I'm not like fully breaking up with the Rockies, but like, we're on a break right now. Let's just say that we're seeing other teams, let's say, or whatever you want to put it. But yeah, I'm not going to the Colorado on this one. The two I pinpointed here, Miguel Vargas of the Dodgers and Alec Thomas of the Arizona Diamondbacks. And Thomas is one of my favorite prospects in all of baseball, and one that always seems to get underrated because there's always been an outfield prospect in that organization that might have a higher ceiling. It was Christian Robinson for a couple of years. Now I think you put Corbin Carroll ahead of him now, even though Carroll just got injured with that shoulder injury, missed a lot of the year. But Thomas has been the one that's been always there, always producing at every level. 312 career hitter in the minors, 388 OBP, a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed. And he got up to AAA, I think it was early August last year, played 34 games there, hit 369 with a 434 OBP, 8 home runs, 5 steals, and 166 plate appearances. So I think you could see him get up, maybe even make the opening day roster. I think he's nearly ready. He's a very advanced. He's only 21, so I think he'll be 22. He'll be 22 early on next year, late April, he'll turn 22. So still young, but he's just been a very advanced hitter ever since he came out of high school in the 2018 draft. So I think he could be one. And then Vargas is really dependent on what the Dodgers do. Is Justin Turner coming back, et cetera, et cetera. So he could play some first. He could play some third. The Dodgers have Bellinger can play first and outfield. Muncy could play multiple spots. So there's that flexibility there. They could move guys around if need be. Vargas is a guy, he's hit at every level pretty much, 316 career hitter in the minor leagues. Only got up to double A, but he's a guy that could maybe sneak in if there's some injuries in spring training. So I wouldn't rule him out either. But Thomas is probably the main one there.
So, Kevin, with a guy like Miguel Vargas, and I'm only picking him out because he's on the Dodgers. Like, again, how much concern do you have about any, after everything we went through with the guys that we were touting last year on the Dodgers, is this a situation that you're completely just avoiding moving forward the way that the Dodgers just, not that they're not the Giants, they're not platooning everybody. They're just finding room for as many talented players as possible. And thus, to your point earlier, avoiding the maximizing the at-bat scenario that you're looking for.
Absolutely. We should thank the Dodgers. They're making it easy for us to do what we should probably do in the first place.
Yeah, it's really tough, just especially without, no matter how talented a guy is, especially in year one, maybe in year two, whether or not they're actually going to see 5 games a week or, you know, 4 games a week rather than the 6 or 7 that you prefer, obviously.
Look at Gavin Lux. He was considered a top 10 prospect in baseball and tore it up in 2019. And he's still, yeah, he got some time in end of this year, but he's still.
He had to change positions.
Yeah.
He had to learn a brand new position just to get more time on the
field. And I'm not even 100% sure he's in the opening day lineup next year. Probably is, but you never know.
You have to assume. You have to assume if Seager's
I hope he is.
Back, if Seager's not coming back, Turner moves over to short and Lux plays second. I think that's what everybody's seeing as the most logical.
Yep.
But who knows?
I hope so. Fingers crossed.
Yes.
All right. Let's go to NL Central, which from my glancing over, it looked like it was one of the deeper ones for at least for options. Eric, do you agree to disagree? Or maybe you have a soft spot for the NL East. I'm not sure. But who do you like in the NL Central?
No, yeah, the Central was the deepest one for me in the National League. Both the Centrals really were the two deeper ones. I got 4 names here, but I think the one, if I'd pick one, I think I'm going to go with Nolan Gorman. He's one that I know the organization loves, Nolan Gorman, and obviously with the addition of Nolan Arenado last year, who's obviously not moving off third base anytime soon. They're like, all right, where are we going to put Gorman long-term? They moved him to second. Looks pretty decent there. You know, I watched some video footage of him in the minor leagues. I don't think he's going to win any gold gloves anytime soon, but adequate there. And that power at that position is going to be a real value. I think you could see a situation where they move Tommy Edman over to short. And that opens up second base for Gorman to come up pretty soon, because there was like some rumblings that he might have been up last year. Obviously, that didn't happen. But I think Nolan Gorman is the most likely one there. And I think, like I said, that power, he's a 30 homer bat. Maybe not more than like a 260 hitter, but kind of like a Dan Uggla, potentially type of player at second base where that power could be really valuable. So he might pick there.
If Dan Uggla hit 260, he would be very proud of himself.
I think he did a couple years, didn't he?
He did. He did.
Yeah. Like peak Dan Uggla. We'll say peak Dan Uggla. All right. And then just like a couple other names just to throw him out there. Brennan Davis, maybe, but more so a midseason guy for the Cubs. And then a couple arms in Cincinnati, Nick Lodolo, Hunter Green have a chance as well.
Yeah, Hunter Green was a guy that was drafted in our mock draft as well, Kevin. Again, it goes back to how much risk do you want to take with pitchers later on. And I don't know, it seems as though the Cincinnati rotation, not that it's flush per se, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of openings there. Is there anybody you like there? Like Cincinnati seems to have, like Eric just mentioned, between Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo, and Matthew Liberatore in St. Louis, it does seem like there are the more starting pitching options in the NL Central, specifically two notable ones in Cincinnati. Is this a situation where there's somebody that stands out that you might be a little bit more interested in than some of the names that we mentioned in the American League?
Possibly someone like Hunter Green, that we know that stuff is fantastic. If he's going to be, and he's been at this point, if he had stayed healthy, we probably would have seen him by now. So if he is healthy, maybe they go ahead and make that move. So that might be an exception there. Also, I would steer away even as we get closer to the season, and I ding guys a little bit, just more hesitant about the possibility of injuries. Hunter Green, even though it's been due to injury, he's been going through this for a couple of years. He's done the rehab thing. He's got the experience doing that. He's learning how to deal with wear and tear on his arm. And so maybe a guy like him is somebody I would trust a little more, but still in general, really leery.
Man, I know it won't happen, but I love to see Cincinnati move Hunter Green back to the two-way player that he was touted so many years ago to be. Throw him at shortstop.
They still need a shortstop. Maybe Jose Barrera is that answer, but yeah.
Sure. All right, let's finish out the National League, Eric. NL East doesn't look to me to be nearly, just like the AL East, doesn't look to be as flush with options, but is there anybody that stood out?
Yeah, the only name I really can see, maybe a Drew Waters, but the name I wrote down was Max Meyer, a guy that could have been up last year, I think. He's one of the more advanced pitchers from the 2020 draft class and made it up to AAA this past year. I think he got a few starts there. He's pitched well at every level. Whether that's, we know Miami's rotation is already chocked full of very good arms. Like, their number 4 and 5 are better than several teams' 2s and 3s. I don't know if there's going to be a spot for him. I think a lot of it might depend on how the health of Sixto Sanchez's shoulder looks in spring training, which was obviously a giant question mark throughout this entire year. And we can, like, when Sixto comes coming back, and then they shut him down finally. But so I think that'll be play a big factor here. But I think if Sixto needs more time, or there's a setback opening up a rotation spot next year, obviously I don't think Miami's quite in the spot where they are going to go out and spend big in free agency. I love the way Kim Ong and Derek Jeter are building that team right now. I think they're going to be a very good team within the next handful of years, but probably not this year. So don't see them going big in free agency. And maybe at this spot, I think you could see Max Meyer up.
Eric mentioned Drew Waters, and I think a lot of people thought he might show himself last year as well. Kevin, I know we talked about him at least once or twice on the pod early on in the season as a possible call-up, especially with Acuna going down when he did and what have you. How interested are you in somebody like Waters, who has been, for the most part, kind of pushing through every level? He was young at every level, obviously has his strikeout issues that we've seen at almost every level, making an adjustment to during spring training to make an opening day roster for Atlanta, and possibly giving them a little bit more flexibility, bringing back Acuna back early or on time. Like we talked about last week, there's, you know, a possibility that Atlanta can just hold him back a little bit longer just to be sure. And they have somebody like Drew Waters who could fill in for that time. Is that something that, is any consideration in your mind as you're drafting a guy like him, if you're drafting him at all?
I don't think it's enough of a possibility for me to be drafting him right now. However, it is something to definitely keep a close eye on, and depending on when you're drafting, the later it gets, keep a close eye and definitely have him earmarked there for a possibility in the first fab period or two, because I think, as you mentioned, he's been there for a couple of years, but he's always been young for his level, and now he's caught up because he's been at this point for a couple of years now, and maybe they wanted him to catch up and have a couple of years. So now I think it is possible, but in my early drafts, I can't do it, but definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, there's not a clear opening either in Atlanta's outfield.
They filled in fine, didn't they?
Yeah, a little bit.
And they're not all coming back. They have, right. At least Soler is on for another year. Obviously, Acuna will come back when he's good and ready. And his former teammate in the minors, Christian Pache, is on the roster as well. So there's not a clear opening per se, but as you mentioned, Atlanta has shown that they can fill those holes. All right, Eric, I'm going to put your feet to fire. Is there any, give me another National League player. The one that kind of stood out for me for the NL East was Cade Cavalli. And I know that it seemed like there's not really a good reason for Washington to force the issue with him, but he's been so good. And he is just, there's nobody in his way past Josiah Gray and Patrick Corbin, just because they're paying him a lot of money. Talent, production is not necessarily holding him back. Do you think there's any chance that Cavalli kind of breaks that mold and Washington just pushes the issue there? Or is there somebody else in the National League that we haven't talked about that's worth keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think Cavalli could. He did have some struggles at AAA after the promotion, but dominated both high A and double A. I saw one of his double A starts. He looked very good when he came up here to Portland. So I think with a strong spring training, I think you could see Cavalli. I think his kind of role to start the year and where he is, whether it's back in AAA or with the Nationals, kind of depends on that spring training performance and how he looks in bullpens and in games. So I definitely think there's a possibility there. And just to throw out like a name that maybe isn't like the super big prospect name, and I will go to Colorado on this one. This is a guy that can play some corner infield, some corner outfield. So a couple different paths to playing time there. And that's Ryan Velarde, who is basically a Brendan Rodgers lookalike. You could have just thrown, I saw Velarde a couple games out in the AFL. That could have been Brendan Rodgers. You never know. I'm just wearing a Ryan Velarde jersey. The same hair, same build, everything. They're basically twins. He's always been a pretty solid prospect, a 289 career hitter, a little bit of pop. He's like a 10-15 homer guy, similar speed as well. I think he could be a guy that's like 15-15 or so. And 360 OBP as well. He has a walk rate close to 10%. Doesn't strike out too much. So pretty solid year last year. Got the AAA, 117 games. So the experience is there. He's going to be 23. So I think who knows what the Rockies will look like come February. But I think there's a chance you could see Velarde get an opening day gig there.
You've just created this untapped market, I think, of like identical twins who both play baseball. A team signs one of them, knowing that they signed both guys, especially if they're a pitcher. They pitch every 3 days and nobody would know. It would just be genius. It's totally something. There's right. A team out there that would do it, and like, I don't know how long they would last.
How did this guy make 64 starts this year? This is insane.
Very impressive.
Or is Big Texas?
I have a question for Eric. Does the potential designated hitter in the National League affect any of this? And what I'm getting to is a guy like Juan Yepes, who's not taking Paul Goldschmidt's spot, but was crushing the ball this season.
Absolutely it does. And if I had to bet money, I think we do get the DH finally. I think that's obviously been something that's been in the rumblings and the cards for the last couple of years now. No pun intended with the cards there. But yeah, Yep is one that the sound off his bat was just one like that. Everyone knows that sound. That was what happened when I heard a couple Juan Yepes batted balls out there in the AFL. Yeah, he's a guy I think could definitely benefit from the DH, and Velarde could as well. Maybe a guy like Vargas could, maybe out with the Dodgers, maybe a Michael Bush, Seth Beer. he did get up end of the year, but Seth Beer could be another guy that could benefit from the DH as well, because I think he is a DH. He's not great defensively. So yeah, if that DH does indeed come to the NL like we think it is, that's going to open up a lot of spots. So that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm gonna close this out here. One more question for you, Eric, and it's about pitchers again. For me, I've always been under the impression that a pitcher, especially a prospect, only has so many bullets in the gun, right? And so it always seems as though they are the ones that are pushed back further, but it logically, from somebody who doesn't scout on a regular basis or didn't pitch even in Little League, like it seems like they should be the ones that get pushed up into the majors a little bit sooner. I don't feel as though we see that very often or as often as I think we should. So what I'm getting to is completely unrelated, but is Mackenzie Gore still a thing? Is Mackenzie Gore still gonna, make it, or is he gonna go Forrest Whitley on us and we're just never gonna see him ever again? And that is to say, maybe are we gonna see Forrest Whitley this year as well? I don't expect him to break camp per se, but of these two guys alone, do you have any expectations of seeing them early in the season? If for no other reason, at this point, we don't need to worry about their clock being started. So let's just get them on a mound and see what they got mentality.
I hope so, because it would really be a bummer if these types of talents just never made it to at least be something, right? Like maybe, obviously, I don't think they're going to turn into what we thought they were going to be a few years ago. Like these are the two guys that were before G-Rod and Shane Bosk stepped up. Like these were like for about 4 years, three, 4 years or so. It was Whitley and then it was Gore as the number one pitching prospect in baseball pretty universally for the most part, too. I'm not like fully out on them. I think the talent is just too high to be fully out. I've dropped them way down my rankings, of course. Maybe a bold kind of hot take. I think Whitley's closing out games for Houston within the next two, three years. I think he could be a damn good one too. Like the stuff is still there. Maybe the command issues, the mechanical issues that he's experienced keep him from being a full-time every 5-6 days type of guy. So maybe the bullpen is that route. And maybe that could be for Gore as well. And I don't think Gore has quite the same electric stuff as Whitley. So see, Gore's kind of lost a feel for his breaking pitches lately. But I do think there's still a thing, just a much smaller thing. And I hope they're at least something because the talents that these guys were, it would really be a bummer to not see them at least do something at the major league level.
Yeah, it'd be a shame to see him, like Mark Appel finally made his way into the major leagues as his age 30 season, first overall pick finally, you know, gets up there. I'd hate to see these guys go that same route, but he made it. So maybe that shouldn't be a concern. They made it to the major leagues, which is more than millions of other people can say. All right. Well, like I said, we talked about the CBA. It may or may not directly address any of the time manipulation. Still strong possibility of prospects who get the call in 2021 could still find themselves starting in 2022 back in the minors, perhaps to legitimately work on their defense or perhaps to manipulate their service time a bit further. So in a moment, we're going to talk about some players that we're afraid may actually start 2022 in AAA or even AA, regardless of their major league playing time. We're going to do that right after this.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right. As I mentioned, I'm going to talk to you guys about some players that we think could possibly find their way onto a minor league roster rather than their major league roster, which they've had some experience in 2021. May it be because they have a bad spring training. Maybe it was always in the cards already by their franchise. And so, Kevin, I'm going to start with you. Is there we'll go hitter pitcher. Talk about whoever you guys want. We'll try to narrow it down to pick one that you're the most afraid of that found time on the major league roster in 2021 that you don't think is going to be on the major league roster come opening day 2022.
Yeah, I almost feel like my hitter is cheating a little bit because it was two plate appearances. You brought him up earlier. You also brought up the fact that it doesn't matter when you accumulate your time. So only two plate appearances. It's going to be very easy for Tampa of all teams to hold Josh Lowe back a little bit. So I feel like that one's low-hanging fruit. But for pitchers, you said narrow it to one, but I don't know which one of these guys. It's the same rotation. And even if they go six-man rotation, which I think they might to start the season, they don't have room for both of these guys probably. Kansas City Royals have Mike Minor, Brad Keller, Brady Singer, Chris Bubik. Carlos Hernandez, I think, is in that rotation. I think he's the surprise of 2021.
I would agree, yep.
He's passed these guys. So there's only room for one of Daniel Lynch or Jackson Coar. I don't know which one will be. They're going to be starting games. They're not going to be in the bullpen. So one of them's not going to be with the major league team in April.
You think Kansas City's going to stick with a six-man rotation?
I think it's possible because of that depth that they have. And with so many of them being young guys, they may go right out of the gate. And young guys that they want to give an opportunity to. if they weren't trying to start to compete, at least maybe not contend, but they really do want to start competing, that they could throw all seven of these guys out there, but they won't do that, but they might go six.
It does seem like Kansas City has the depth, at least in the rotation and their pitching prospect arsenal, that they could definitely manipulate a little bit more easily than other teams could, or at least make it less obvious. Not saying that's what Kansas City is doing, but like you said, you want these guys starting games. You don't want necessarily, especially since they've been starting games, both in the majors and the minors, throughout the course of the last year, 2 years. You don't want to all of a sudden just change that unless you're going to make them a reliever. And my pitcher is in the same vein. I just don't see Edward Cabrera being on the Miami opening day roster for really all the same stuff that you're talking about with Kansas City and those guys. They have too many mouths to feed ultimately. And he's, as far as I'm concerned, he's the low man on the totem pole between Lizardo. They traded for Lizardo. They see something in him, whether or not that produced on the field last year or not. I think they're still going to want to give him that opportunity. Sixto Sanchez, his health, obviously a question, as Eric mentioned. Alcantara, who's obviously their number one. Trevor Rogers right there with him. Pablo Lopez, Eliza Hernandez. Zach Thompson was a long relief by the end of the year, but he was filling in quite, you know, admirably throughout the course of the season. And as Eric mentioned, Max Meyer in the wings as well. So I do wonder if Miami has enough trust in enough of these guys, if they end up pulling another Zach Gallen type trade like they did 2 years ago, where they try to fill another hole somewhere else by either trading a Cabrera or I think Alcantara and Trevor Rogers are obviously beyond trading at this point. But even a Pablo Lopez or even, God forbid, a Max Meyer, I think a lot of people thought Zach Gallen was untradeable. And obviously that didn't happen. So I think that's really the only way, if something like that happens, that Cabrera makes the opening day roster. Now, does he come up soon after? Sure. Absolutely. He didn't pitch that much last year. As we're talking about, manipulation can happen throughout the course of two different seasons. They can just hold him down for about, I think, maybe 2 months instead of 3 or 4 weeks and still get that extra year. But I don't see him being in the opening roster. And then I want to end with my hitter, because I really want to get Eric's take on this as well as another Red Sox fan. I'm just really afraid Jarren Duran is not going to be on the Red Sox opening day roster. His struggles were real, as somebody who had him on multiple fantasy rosters, won him in Fab in multiple places. I think it was 215 average. It just couldn't really hit anything. Couldn't steal any bases, which is the calling card. The power he showed in AAA just didn't translate to Fenway as well. They don't have, the Red Sox also don't have a clear spot for him per se. Nobody's a free agent. No openings are gonna be happening. Renfro is signed through the 2023 season. Hernandez, plays center field right now, is signed through the 2022 season, through this season. Verdugo, obviously, still under control through the 2024 season, at least. And Martinez, who's up?
That was me.
Sorry, that was me.
Oh, was that you?
It was.
I thought it was me. I have a draft board up in the background, too. I thought it was me.
I don't know if anybody heard that because it was in my earbuds, so it might not even show up on the recording, but obviously we have two guys here who are in draft, so good luck, guys. Let us know after the next, when I'm done with my little spiel here.
At least I'm not at work like Vlad Sedler posts about every year during draft season.
I did that once. I forgot I had it in the background and people looked at me. I'm like, sorry, didn't know that was up. What was that sound? The Fantrax horn, which I love. I work for Fantrax, but we got to change that horn. It's so obnoxious.
At least a lot of different ones. You can change the, at least I think in NFBCs, you can change the sound that you have. It's a trademark. It's a trademark sound you have.
Yeah, it kind of is at this point, so it's probably not going anywhere.
Anyway, just kind of sum it up. I just don't see a clear spot for Duran to start off unless he has an amazing spring training, kind of forces the issue. I can see him. I think he's beyond they could hold him down for multiple weeks and months to get that extra year, but I think that's beyond that point at this point. I could see him not being on the opening day roster. That's all.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. I think they want to give him some more time just to get right. I agree there's that chance if he dominates in spring training. But just the fact that there's no clear opening, they have guys. Instead of Red Sox, they can go out and get a couple more guys as well. And we'll see if Schwarber comes back. Obviously, he can place a little bit of outfield as well. But yeah, I think AAA is going to be where he starts. And that'll be a pretty damn good AAA team, though. Him, Downs, and Cassis, probably at least there for a month or two. But yeah, I don't see Cassis. Both your picks are very good. Those are two guys I thought of, both Downs, Duran and Edward Cabrera. So yeah, I don't see Duran up. But I still believe in Duran. I think the power gains were real. There was tangible mechanical changes that he made to unlock it. But at the same time, he hasn't been running as much as he did in early 2019. He was in high A, then a little bit here in double A. The average kind of gone the other way. So he did make that sacrifice. And so it'll be interesting to see how the profile ends up. When he's a finished product, so to speak, and a major leaguer, what does the stat line look like? But outside of power. So he's one I still like. But yeah, I think he needs some more time in AAA.
Yeah, it seems as though I would love to see Downs up in Downs, Cassis, and Duran all up at the major league level together. But I think that it makes more all sense in the world for all three of them to be in AAA on the same team in Worcester, having a good time in that new ballpark with the Woo Sox. Sox. So Eric, we'll end it with you. Who are you afraid of isn't going to make their roster, even though they played some time in the majors last year?
Yeah, I'm cheating with my hitter because he only got up for, I think, two games, but did have a home run. And that's O'Neill Cruz, who I just love. O'Neill Cruz, the dude's just a freakishly athletic guy, 6'7", which I think he might. It was funny. I made the joke that, you know, back when I was still doing the bigger articles for my offseason, like top 25 team by team prospect rankings, now I do it differently. But I made the joke one year that like every year I did it, I had to add 2 inches onto his height. He's going to be like 7'1" by the time I do this in like 2023 or something like that. But yeah, 6'7", very athletic, very strong, still growing into that power. So he didn't have the big home run numbers. But just the fact that he skipped over AAA. I think they just wanted to give him a couple games just to get his feet wet, give him this a taste of the major league. So I think he goes back to AAA to start, but probably up midseason or so. Obviously, there's nothing really in his way there in Pittsburgh. And then my pitcher, Luis Gil, the New York Yankees, who looks pretty good. But I think it's just another fact that I think he's just going to get squeezed because you look at the Yankees right now, who they have in their rotation already. Obviously, Gerrit Cole. Then you got Luis Severino is going to be back in that rotation. Jameson Taillon is there for at least another year. Jordan Montgomery is there for another 2 years. So you got to think those four are all in the rotation. So then Kluber's gone from free agency. Clark Schmidt is still in play when he gets back at some point in 2022. And that's the Yankees. So you got to imagine they got to be looking at some of these free agent arms, whether it's like a Marcus Stroman, Justin Verlander, whoever it may be. They could even get Max Scherzer. It wouldn't surprise me. Nothing ever surprises me with the Yankees. That would suck. But nothing surprises me with the Yankees. I learned that a long time ago as a young child watching the Red Sox Yankees. Yes, I think Luis Gil just gets squeezed out. I think he's shown that he's could definitely be worth a spot and definitely earned a spot, I should say. But I just think he gets squeezed out. So I'll go O'Neill Cruz and Luis Gil.
Yeah, I'll remind everybody, Taillon did have ankle surgery just recently, and I would expect him to be ready to go for spring training.
Yeah, but who knows with ankles and yeah, those are always tricky.
Obviously something to monitor in that situation, obviously with Gil and other guys that are vying for opportunities with the Yankees, which aren't not all, like you said, Eric, not always easy to come by when you're coming up in that system, especially for pitchers. Seems like they just don't trust their own players that they bring up. They'd rather just go out and get somebody to fill those spots unless they absolutely have to. All right, we're going to end it here with some predictions from everybody here. We talked about guys that had no major league experience who we think that could open it up. And then we talked about some guys who we think could end up starting back in minors, even though they had a taste of the majors, at least a taste, even if it was just an at bat or two. So now I want to get your guys' predictions on the 2022 Rookie of the Year Awards. And even though the 2021 Rookie of the Year Awards haven't even been announced yet, let's just skip ahead. And who do we got? And give a brief synopsis as to why. I'll kick us off in the American League. It goes back to what we talked about in the very top of the show. Adley Rutschman, obviously, I think, especially as a catcher, it's really going to rely on him coming up early to get those at-bats, to put up that production. But I think that everybody is aware of the talent level that he has. That he'll slide right into the middle of the order, if not toward the top of the order. And he's going to be a really important part of that franchise for years and years to come. And I'm also just really looking forward to seeing Adley Rutschman hit in Baltimore in the summertime. And that'll just be hopefully a lovely sight. And I think it won't play enough of a role as it does in even in an MVP award, but what he'll bring to the field, what he'll bring to the rotation and just bringing up those guys, those young talents as well, I think should play more of a role in when you're considering for that award. It won't, but I think it should. All right, and let's go. Eric, I'm going to go to you first. Who's your American League?
I hate to be pick the obvious choice. I tried to stay away from it. Usually when picking my awards, like I was never a guy that was like 2013, 14, 15, like, all right, I'll pick Mike Trout. It's everyone picking Mike Trout, but it's obvious here. I think he's going to be up first. I think he has the highest skill set. But look at the three we picked in the American League. I'm not going to give like Kevin's, but all three of these guys are top 10 prospects in baseball right now. So it's going to be a really fun American League Rookie of the Year race next year. But I'll go Bobby Witt Jr. I think he's up by the end of April. I think there's a great chance he goes 2020 next year. Obviously, I thought Jared Kelenic was gonna be the Rookie of the Year this year, and obviously that didn't work out too well. So you never know what's going to happen.
But I think, gonna bring him up, Eric.
Yeah, I'll bring him up. It's fine. You know, take your lumps, swallow your pride. I'll bring him up. I still think he's gonna be very good though. But yeah, I think Witt can go. Yeah, he could go 2020 this year. I think, or 2022. I think that's a distinct possibility with a solid average as well. Plays good defense. I know that doesn't really factor in too much. Or really at all. It's mostly just a numbers thing. But yeah, I think he's going to be the guy just when you see that power speed. I think that'll give him the advantage over the guy and two other great candidates here that we're talking about. So I'll go Witt.
All right, Kevin, since Eric obviously stole your player.
Sorry, Kevin.
No, I think Kevin filled in his guy before you did.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
Who do you got?
Yeah, I agree with Eric 100%. And I've talked extensively over the past year about Bobby Witt Jr. Of course, he's who I'm rooting for. But I took Riley Green here. I agree with Eric. The American League could be a lot of fun. And what was intriguing to me was Green improved when he made the jump to AAA this season. Every category of the triple slash line went up. He hit just as many home runs, just as high of a home run pace. He looked absolutely phenomenal. I was really disappointed with his concussion at the end of the year because he was scheduled to be at the Arizona Fall League.
Yeah.
But we did not get to see him. And Alex Avila comments, I'm paraphrasing, I think it was yesterday or today, said, I do not know when we will see him. I'm not going to tell you when I think we might see him, but I will tell you it's going to be very soon. So I think we see Riley Green early. And I think he should hit the ground running, hopefully.
Yeah, these are three really good names to keep an eye out for. This is without even mentioning Torkelson or some of the other guys that we mentioned earlier on in the podcast, even pitchers like George Kirby or Grayson Rodriguez, if they were to call him up. There's plenty of pitchers in the running this year for Rookie of the Year. It's not to say that a pitcher won't win Rookie of the Year in any given time as well. So don't sleep on those options as well. All right, Kevin, I'm going to stick with you. Who about your National League Rookie of the Year? Who are you looking at?
I believe Eric mentioned him earlier. I don't think we see him to start the season. I call it the Chris Bryant rule for a reason, but I'm excited to see what Brennan Davis does when he does get the call for the Cubs. I remember hearing a lot about him in 2020. He was one of the few minor leaguers that we actually heard a little bit of news on once in a while, and it was encouraging news. It sounded like things were going well. He backed it up here in 2021. I think Eric alluded to it might be midsummer. I hope it's not that long. I hope it's more like into April when they get the extra year of control, if things stay that way, because that's what would need to happen for him to win Rookie of the Year. But if he does come up fairly early, I think he's got a good shot.
And the news that I remember about Brandon Davis came last year when he was doing like an autograph session in the midseason in Chicago, and everybody was talking about, Brandon Davis is in Chicago. What's he doing? Is he
I remember that. Yeah.
That annoyed me. All right. I'm going to sneak in here. I'm going to go with another catcher. So I make sure I just rank catchers on both of my choices. And it's one of those guys who's I feel like he's been around way too long, but he's still eligible. Devin Williams is still eligible for this year, even though obviously he made a name for himself in the shortened season as well. But Joey Bart in San Francisco, I think he's going to get, obviously he saw his own struggles when in his more than cup of coffee, but he's still under the 130 at-bat marks. He should still, I believe he still has rookie eligibility going into next year. And I think a lot, what we talked about earlier about whether or not there's going to be a DH in the National League. I think most people are going into this thinking that is a given, if as close to a given as possible. And it's going to allow Joey Bart to have regular playing time between catcher and designated hitter, maybe spill into first base as he shares some time with Buster Posey out there, if assuming Buster Posey re-signs with San Francisco. So that's a whole nother opening that could arise if that actually doesn't happen. And with the amount of playing time that I think he could, and the experience he's been provided with at both the major league level and the adjustments he's been able to make at the AAA level after being sent down for the majority of last year, I think he has the opportunity to like really take that by storm and build off of that, as opposed to not being in a situation that like Wander Franco found himself, no matter how good he wasn't going to be able to provide himself with enough opportunity to be considered for the American League Rookie of the Year award. I'm assuming, who knows, maybe the voters will prove me wrong on that. But Bart's going to have plenty of opportunity, I think, in San Francisco, and I think he's going to run with it. Eric, let's finish it off. Who's your National League Rookie of the Year option?
After yesterday, when this player declared himself a rookie for life, 2022 rookie, NL Rookie of the Year is going to be Juan Soto.
2024, there you go.
He's a 23-year-old veteran. You know, heck nah, I'll be a rookie for life with a bunch of smiley, laughy faces. I'm like, all right, I'm all for that. But no, my actual pick is I'm gonna go Sixto Sanchez. He's still another one of those guys that you just mentioned that he's still eligible. He pitched 39 innings back in 2020, pitched very well, 3.46 ERA that year. And assuming the shoulder is healthy, which I think shutting him down was the right call. Miami obviously wasn't contending, didn't really need to rush him back and risk re-aggravating that shoulder. So I think he should be rested. Hopefully there's no setback, fingers crossed there. But if he's healthy, he's gonna be in that rotation. So a rookie of the year eligible player getting hopefully a full season of starts, 30 starts, 150 plus innings. Hopefully maybe they limit him a little bit just because they don't need to push him too much next year either. But I think the ratios will be there. I think the strikeouts will tick up. He's never been a big strikeout rate guy, even throughout his time in the minor leagues, even dating back to this time in the Phillies organization. But he has the stuff too. Like, he's at the spot right now where like Dustin May was about a year and a half ago, and then Dustin May made the adjustments and the K rate ticked up, unfortunately, before he hit Tommy John. But I think Sixto has that same ability, the same type of arsenal to miss bats at a high clip. You got the upper 90s fastball with run. You know, the slider is a very good offering. Changeup is even better. So I think he's going to be, you know, at least some solid strikeout numbers, good ratios, have the volume that you look for there. So I'll go Sixto Sanchez there.
Nice. Finally have a pitcher on the list. I appreciate that. This is a pitcher list podcast network show, and, after all.
We can't anger Nick Pollock and not talk a little bit about pitching at least, right?
Just a little bit. All right. On that note, we'll end it on there with the pitcher. That's going to do it for this week's On the Wire. We will be putting out episodes every 2 weeks throughout the off season, so keep a lookout for those incoming. And please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and leaving a rating review is always appreciated. Again, thank you, Eric Cross, for joining us for this episode. Eric, could you remind everyone at home how they can follow you if they're not already for whatever reason, and what you're currently working on so they can keep a lookout for it?
Yeah, of course. And first off, thank you, both of you, for having me on. This was a lot of fun. I always appreciate coming on podcasts, and I love everything that's going on at Pitcher List as well, obviously. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at EricCross04. All of my written work is at FantrexHQ.com. In addition to the Fantasy Baseball Black Book that Joe Pizzapia puts out every year, that's usually out sometime in, I think, December, that goes to the printer. So I'll be doing the top 100 prospects in that. Be on the lookout for that as well. It's a nice book. It's like, what, $14 or something like that. A lot of stuff in there. Spores in there. Casey Bubba. A lot of good names. A good crew we get over there. And then I get the Fantrax Toolshed podcast with Chris Clegg. We've been doing weekly stuff there. A lot of dynasty and prospect work now, obviously, with the season over. And then just at Fantrax HQ in general, we're still pumping out some baseball content, some player analysis, dynasty and prospect work, the 2021 reviews, and 2022 preview type of stuff looking ahead. So a lot of good stuff going on. It's a 365-day sport for a lot of us. Yeah, thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. This is great work. And I feel like, except for strictly prospect or dynasty podcasts like the ones that you do regularly, there's not a ton of prospect talk at this time of year as we're looking into doing really early offseason drafts, Kevin, and actually Eric as well. And so I think this is just really good stuff to think about early on. Get those edges. All right. So we'll be talking about a lot of different things throughout the offseason. If there's a topic you want us to discuss throughout this offseason, let us know. Email us at onthewirepod@gmail.com. You can shoot us a DM on the Twitter at onthewirepod. Of course, you should be joining PL Plus over at pitcherlist.com, where you get access to the Pitcherlist Discord and the advice and banter of all the members and Pitcherlist staff who are just waiting to talk baseball all year round, whether there's fantasy implications or not. And you get access to PL7, which comes out in early February, earlier than everybody else. So take a look at that. It's a great option. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade, all spelled out. Kevin is at HastingKevin. Make sure to follow at Pitcherlist Pods to get updates about every new episode of all the Pitcherlist Podcast Network shows and give them all a listen. Thanks once again to Eric Cross for joining us. And on behalf of Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. With that, we bid you goodbye.